from the endless stream of public health booty he controls, their spoils from the war on germs and on skeptics. HIV vaccines, a new lease on life. In March 2020, Bill Gates stepped down from his position on the board of directors at Microsoft, explaining that he was now spending the predominant amount of his time on the pandemic. Gates celebrated his Microsoft retirement by directing a river of money to build 6 manufacturing plants for different COVID vaccines and funding vaccine trials by companies like Inovio Pharmaceuticals, AstraZeneca, and Moderna Inc., all front-runners in the race to develop a COVID-19 jab. The Gates Foundation also invested $480 million in a wide range of vaccine candidates and platform technologies through the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness, CEPI, which Gates founded with Wellcome Trust Director Jeremy Farrar. Tony Fauci, meanwhile, took over managing the White House Coronavirus Task Force. The two men played tag team on the evening news and Sunday talk shows to promote remdesivir and to let their obsequious hosts and the American people know that the only way to end the global hostage crisis was compliance by 7 billion people with their new vaccines. No one ever questioned Gates's mantric pronouncement, which he repeated like a Gregorian chant. Realistically, if we're going to return to normal, we need to develop a safe, effective vaccine. We need to make billions of doses. We need to get them out to every part of the world, and we need all of this to happen as quickly as possible. He reiterated versions of this message ad nauseum, as he did again on CNN on March 22, 2020. Things won't be back to truly normal until we have a vaccine that we've gotten out to basically the entire world. Back to HIV. But despite all the excitement about COVID, neither of these partners forgot their first love, AIDS. On February 9, 2021, with his Operation Warp Speed vaccine rollout approaching the finish line, Dr. Tony Fauci took a well-earned breather to make an exciting announcement. He told his giddy media acolytes that NIH had just committed to a $200 million joint initiative with the Gates Foundation to fund the next generation of AIDS vaccines using NIAID's new mRNA technology. This collaboration is an ambitious step forward, harnessing the most cutting-edge scientific tools and NIH's sizable global HIV research infrastructure to one day deliver a cure and end the global HIV pandemic. Ignoring 40 years of abysmal failure, NIH Director Francis S. Collins, MD, PhD, who plays Robin to Dr. Fauci's Batman, added, "We aim to go big or go home." That thrilling announcement occurred almost exactly 40 years after the first report of AIDS. After 4 decades of cataclysmic outcomes, billions of squandered dollars, untold lives lost, and failed promises, the press corps gave this most recent production the same rapt and credulous applause with which they greeted Teflon Tony's 100 other indistinguishable pronouncements over 4 decades. He is the P.T. Barnum of public health, Marvel's journalist Celia Farber. He cracks his whip and says abracadabra, and they all forget that they've seen the same trick so many times. It's really quite astonishing. By then, the Fauci-Gates arsenal of COVID pokes were topping the all-time charts for medical money-making by their pharma partners, with Pfizer alone projecting $96 billion in COVID vaccine sales. Moderna followed up Dr. Fauci's appearance with a press release announcing new mRNA vaccines for Zika, Ebola, flu, cancer, and HIV. On July 25, 2021, Dr. Fauci expanded on this exciting communique by announcing a new multi-billion-dollar government initiative to use taxpayer money and NIAID-patented mRNA technology to prepare distinct new vaccines for 20 families of viruses that might spark future pandemics. Dr. Fauci disclosed that he was already in discussions with the Biden White House about his electrifying proposal, which he said will cost a few billion dollars on top of NIAID's existing $6 billion budget. He said he planned to launch the project in 2022. Dr. Collins said he found Dr. Fauci's proposal compelling, scolding that as we begin to contemplate a successful end to the COVID-19 pandemic, we must not slip back into complacency. On September 2, 2021, Joe Biden came through for Dr. Fauci again, announcing a $65 billion pandemic response effort. Dr. Fauci will be its point man. Biden's announcement eclipsed some sad news. On August 31, 2021, Dr. Fauci acknowledged their premature termination of yet another of his African HIV vaccine experiments. A large trial on 2,600 African girls of a Johnson & Johnson HIV jab, funded jointly by NIAID and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, had failed to demonstrate a beneficial effect. The heartbreaking legacy of medical colonialism. Rudyard Kipling originally coined the term white man's burden in his 1897 poem exhorting the moral imperative of the United States and England to impose Western civilizations and Christianity on tribal peoples for their own good. Every student of African history is familiar with the recurring theme of well-intentioned white men visiting calamity on Africans. My interest in Africa began as a child. I have traveled the continent for 6 decades and met some of its most visionary leaders, including Tom Mboya, Jomo Kenyatta, Julius Nyerere, and Nelson Mandela. These anti-colonial leaders understood that poverty is a complex conspiracy of social, historical, political, institutional, and technical maladies. It is most often best addressed through small-scale, locally tailored trial-and-error experimentation. The optimal solutions are invariably homegrown with regular local input, disciplined self-assessment, accountability, frequent course corrections, and lots of humility by administrators, officials, and above all, foreigners. Gates's HIV vaccine and antiviral program is due to its continent-wide scale, arguably the worst in a long parade of paternalistic Western schemes by imperialists, avaricious adventurers, scammers, schemers, charlatans, double-dealing rogues, and well-meaning dolts who regularly pledge to end African suffering. Instead of approaching Africa with humility, curiosity, open ears, and a willingness to support local initiatives, Gates leads with the same Weisenheimer arrogance that Judge Penfield Jackson pegged as Gates's defining character trait in his 1998 ruling. At best, Gates and Dr. Fauci are just the latest in a long line of crusaders, con artists, and conquistadors who periodically appear on the continent armed with the conviction that they know what's best for Africans. Too often, these are self-serving, one-size-fits-all vanity projects that, in the end, only compound calamity and magnify suffering. At worst, in the words of Loffredo and Greenstein, Gates and his foundation function as a Trojan horse for Western corporations, which of course have no goal greater than an increased bottom line. The foundation appears to see the Global South as both a dumping ground for drugs deemed too unsafe for the developed world and a testing ground for drugs not yet determined to be safe enough for the developed world. Magical vaccines are Gates's preeminent cookie-cutter solution for the ills of poverty, famine, drought, and disease. the absurdity of expensive shots as a remedy for indigence, a salve for malnutrition, or the dearth of potable water is obvious when one considers that 3 billion people live on less than $2 per day. 840 million people don't have enough to eat. 1 billion lack clean water or access to sanitation. 1 billion are illiterate. About a quarter of children in poor countries do not finish primary school. Poverty is a target-rich environment, but the data suggests that Gates's vaccines miss the target altogether. Sociologist Lindsay McGoey quotes a young health researcher based at the University of Cape Coast on Western Ghana. "From my point of view, it's more like the Gates Foundation are selling technology than solving problems. Most of their calls have to do with developing some new technology or vaccines." How Gates controls the WHO. Worst, Gates has used his money strategically to infect the international aid agencies with his distorted self-serving priorities. The United States historically has been the largest direct donor to WHO, with a contribution of $604.2 million in 2018 through 2019, the last years for which numbers are available. That year, BMGF gave $431.3 million, and Gavi gave $316.5 million. Plus, Gates also routes funding to WHO through SAGE and UNICEF and Rotary International, bringing his cumulative total contributions to over $1 billion, making Gates the unofficial top sponsor of the WHO, even before the Trump administration's 2020 move to cut all his support to the organization. Those $1 billion tax-deductible donations give Gates leverage and control over WHO's $5.6 billion budget and over international health policy, which he largely directs to serve the profit interest of his pharma partners. Pharmaceutical companies cement WHO's institutional bias toward vaccines with approximately $70 million of their own direct contributions. "Our priorities are your priorities," Gates declared in 2011. In 2012, WHO's then Director General Margaret Chan complained that because the WHO's budget is highly earmarked, it is driven by what she calls donor interests. According to McGoey, according to its charter, the WHO is meant to be accountable to member governments. The Gates Foundation, on the other hand, is accountable to no one other than its three trustees, Bill, Melinda, and Berkshire Hathaway CEO Warren Buffett. Many civil society organizations fear the WHO's independence is compromised when a significant portion of its budget comes from a private philanthropic organization with the power to stipulate exactly where and how the UN institution spends its money. McGoey observes that virtually every significant decision at WHO is first vetted by the Gates Foundation. As the UK-based NGO Global Justice Now told Grey Zone, the foundation's influence is so pervasive that many actors in international development, which would otherwise critique the policy and practice of the foundation, are unable to speak out independently as a result of its funding and patronage. See also The Perils of Philanthrocapitalism, Eric Franklin Amarante, Maryland Law Review, 2018. Gates's vaccine obsession has diverted WHO's giving away from poverty alleviation, nutrition, and clean water to make vaccine uptake its preeminent public health metric, and Gates is not afraid to throw his weight around. In 2011, Gates spoke at the WHO, ordering that all 193 member states, you must make vaccines a central focus of your health systems. The following year, the World Health Assembly, which sets the WHO agenda, adopted a global vaccine plan that the Gates Foundation co-authored. Over half of WHO's total budget now goes to vaccines. That narrow focus on inoculations is deepening Africa's health crisis, according to global health experts and African officials. Their control of several billion dollars in annual inputs gives Gates and Fauci effective control over not only WHO, but also the retinue of authoritative quasi-governmental agencies that Gates, often with Fauci's assistance and support, created and/or funded, including CEPI, Gavi, PATH, UNITAID, UNICEF, SAGE, the Global Development Program, the Global Fund, the Brighton Collaboration, and governmental health ministries in dozens of African nations that are largely dependent on the WHO and other global health partnerships. A 2017 analysis of the 23 global health partnerships revealed that 7 were entirely dependent on Gates funding, and another 9 listed the foundation as its top donor. The Gates Foundation also controls the Strategic Advisory Group of Experts, SAGE, the principal advisory group to the WHO for vaccines. During a recent meeting, half of SAGE's governing board of 15 people listed conflicts of interest with the Gates Foundation. The most powerful of these groups is Gavi, the second largest non-state funder of the WHO. Gates created Gavi as a public-private partnership that facilitates bulk sales of vaccines from his pharma partners to poor countries. Gavi is the template for Gates' impressive capacity to use his celebrity, credibility, and wealth to mesmerize key public officials and heads of state into giving Gates control over their foreign aid spending. Gates launched Gavi in 1999 with a $750 million donation. The BMGF occupies a permanent seat on the Gavi board. Other organizations that Gates controls or can rely upon, WHO, UNICEF, the World Bank, and the pharmaceutical industry occupy additional seats, giving Gates dictatorial authority over Gavi's decision-making. The BMGF has donated a total of $4.1 billion to Gavi to date. But Gates has used that relatively trivial contribution, and his personal charm, I suppose, to attract over $16 billion from government and private donors, including $1.16 billion annually from the U.S. government, 5 times the amount that Gates donates to the WHO. When President Trump withdrew the United States from WHO in 2020, he continued the U.S. contribution of $1.16 billion to Gavi. The cumulative effect, therefore, of the withdrawal was to increase Gates' power over WHO and over global health policy. A recent assessment of Gavi by British Prime Minister Boris Johnson offers potent testimony of Gates' capacity to inspire the sort of obsequious adulation that has prompted Western leaders to hand over foreign policy and vast hoards of taxpayer dollars to Gates' discretion. In August 2021, Johnson declared that Gavi was the new NATO. Switzerland, which hosts Gavi's global headquarters in Geneva, has granted Gates' group full diplomatic immunity, a privilege Switzerland denies to many nations and their diplomats. Additionally, the sheer magnitude of his foundation's financial contributions has made Bill Gates an unofficial, albeit unelected, leader of the WHO. By 2017, Gates's power was so complete that he handpicked his deputy, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, as the WHO's new director general, despite complaints that Tedros would be the first director general to the WHO without a medical degree, and despite Tedros's dubious background. Critics credibly charged Tedros with running a terror group associated with extreme human rights violations, including genocidal policies against a rival tribal group in Ethiopia. As Ethiopia's foreign minister, Tedros aggressively suppressed freedom of speech, including arresting and jailing journalists who criticized his party's policies. Tedros's key qualification for the WHO gig was his loyalty to Gates. Tedros previously served on the boards of two organizations that Gates founded, funded, and controls, Gavi and the Global Fund, where Tedros was Gates' trusted chair of the board. Gavi is the most tangible outcome of the partnership Gates sealed with Fauci in early 2000. Under the terms of the partnership, Dr. Fauci greenhouses a pipeline of new vaccines in NIAID labs and farms them out for cultivation in clinical trials by his university PIs and the pharmaceutical multinationals in which Gates holds high investment stakes. Gates then builds out supply chains and creates innovative financial devices for guaranteeing those companies' markets in third world countries. A key feature of this scheme is Gates's capacity, through WHO, to pressure developing countries to expedite and purchase the vaccine, and to use Gavi as a bank through which wealthy countries co-sign the debt. Western nations once funneled their foreign aid through traditional NGOs for food and economic development. Gates has captured those deal flows for Gavi and his pharma partners by pressuring Western countries to fork over their foreign aid to Gavi. Gates thereby hijacks the foreign assistance monies from wealthy governments, diverting it to drug makers. In May 2012, following two meetings with Gavi CEO Dr. Seth Berkley, Fauci candidly described the close relationship between Gavi and NIH. "We, NIH, work on the upstream component of the fundamental research development. Gavi develops a vaccine and gets it into the arms of people who need them." Dr. Fauci explained that while NIH is way up in the upstream and Gavi is way down in the downstream, there is no daylight between Gates' organization and his agency. There are areas of synergy and outright collaboration between us in setting the standard of what is needed and what kinds of research questions are important to answer. We don't want to be putting resources, particularly in the developing world, if the research isn't going to be implemented, particularly with cold chain concerns. Gavi is much more of a visible, coordinated force now, with a lot of resources, working in many, many countries. In contrast to some of the less reliable African governments, it's an organization you can deal directly with. Western nations originally conceived the World Health Organization and the United Nations to embody liberal ideologies implemented via a democratic structure of one nation, one vote, India's leading human rights activist, Dr. Vandana Shiva, told me. Gates has single-handedly destroyed all that. He has hijacked the WHO and transformed it into an instrument of personal power that he wields for the cynical purpose of increasing pharmaceutical profits. He has single-handedly destroyed the infrastructure of public health globally. He has privatized our health systems and our food systems to serve his own purposes. As Jeremy Lofrido and Michelle Greenstein concede in their July 2020 article, the Gates Foundation has already effectively privatized the international body charged with creating health policy, transforming it into a vehicle for corporate dominance. It has facilitated the dumping of toxic products onto the people of the global south, and even used the world's poor as guinea pigs for drug experiments. The Gates Foundation's influence over public health policy is practically contingent on ensuring that safety regulations and other government functions are weak enough to be circumvented. It therefore operates against the independence of nation-states and as a vehicle for Western capital.
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. so please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.